Back together again, midweek Wednesday style, February 8th, 2023 on Connecticut Today. I talked about how I think some Republican House members embarrassed themselves during the previous night's State of the Union address. We also talked about Governor Ned Lamont's latest budget address and got reaction from Greenwich GOP State Senator Ryan Fazio to some of what the governor is proposing. And before you ask me, did you watch the State of the Union last night? No, I didn't. I was doing a hockey game, which was much more fun. However, I did see video excerpts of it last night and this morning, and I did read front to back the president's remarks, the transcript, if you will, early on today. And the reason I did that is I can't take the applause lines. Oh, my God. The applause. Good evening. Hey. Oh, just give me just I can't. I don't care who's in the White House. I don't care what party it is. Who can sit through that? Oh, my God. It's like a root canal without Novocaine. Oh. Look, and I understand that we discussed it this week with our buddy, our pal, Professor Alan Sanders there, former DC Time Magazine guy. I mean, it is what it is, and it's great that it's done. I get it. But one thing that I did see that made my head explode, of course, figuratively today, not literally, because I'm guessing if my head did actually physically explode, I wouldn't be here right now. But I am. So let's take that in the metaphorical sense, shall we? I came across some stuff last night and this morning about members of the Republican Party shouting at the president. What in the hell is the matter with you? How has the Republican Party, and I'm sorry if a lot of you people don't like me saying this, I know I have basically a conservative listenership. You know what? I don't care. When did the Republican Party become the party of stupid? Do you not understand that yelling and screaming, shouting down a president, A, is playing right into their hands, and B, makes you look like a cavone? Yes, I'm talking to you, Marjorie Taylor Greene. I don't know where you're from down there in Georgia. I don't know if they say the word cavone, but you look like a chidrul, a cavone, a stunad. Oh, but they shouted down Mr. Biden last night at a couple of things. I have an idea. Why don't you act? All of you people who shout people down, and it happens now, there are three or four knuckleheads now in every Republican Congress, and they think, well, the reason they do it is they know it's not going to make a difference. They just want the spotlight on them. And I know there are people that vote for these people, and I get it, I understand. And who did the shouting last night? I have it here, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Bob Good, he's another one, Andy O-G-L-E-S, is it Ogles or Oogles or Ogles? I have no idea. But I have an idea. You may not agree with the president of the United States. I get it. I understand that. It's very passionate. But you know what? When he is speaking as the leader of the country, even with an address that you might not agree with, sit down and shut the you-know-what up. Seriously. Now, you want to hold a news conference afterwards? Go ahead. You want to hold a little press gaggle, what they call, outside the chamber there, or go to your office or do a Zoom call? That's fine. But, my God, show a little just a modicum of class. You can still vehemently disagree with somebody and not be an idiot. And this is like a regular occurrence now. And I, honest to God, I feel sorry for Kevin McCarthy because he tried to, from what I read in the video I saw, he was trying to keep them from doing this. My God, Speaker McCarthy, why would you want that job? You know, John Boehner once said he was on the Tonight Show of all shows with Johnny Carson. With Leno years ago. And Leno said, what's the job like of being House Speaker? He goes, it's like herding cats. You're trying to keep all these people in line. Some are more sensible than the others. But my God, the thing we saw last night, unbelievable. Well, I shouted out because the president was lying. Okay, maybe he was. But do you think shouting anything actually makes a difference? What it does is it makes you look like a cavone, and it plays right into the hands of the Democrats. See, here's the thing. A lot of these Republicans, and again, I'm a registered Republican here, but I'm going to call out my side when you're acting like a fool. I'm like the coach who tells you we run the play this way. It's on a count of two. We run it this way. You run that pattern. You stay into block. If you're going to start freelancing, I'm going to sit your rear end down. You run the play the way the coach or the House Speaker or the majority leader tells you to run it. You don't freelance here. But my God. And I found this quote last night, which is interesting, and you know why these people do it. And there's not a lot of them. There are three or four in each Congress, mainly on the Republican side. I know the Democrats have theirs too, but see, they do it for their own self aggrandizing. They're all they want. This sense of grandeur, I guess it is. I don't even know if I'm using the right word here, but this whole sense of grandeur. Marjorie Taylor Greene said last night, she was talking to, who'd she give this comment to? Just want to make sure this is in the heel. Yeah, she was talking to Manu Raju from CNN. She goes, I didn't take any bait. Now, listen to this. And this is the mentality of some of these people there, on the left and on the right, but mainly on the right here. She goes, as a matter of fact, now listen to this. Does this not tell you, hello? You know, ego, Dr. Freud, line one, quote, as a matter of fact, I got so many messages from people in my district and people across the country. It was like I won the election again. Really? She actually said that with a straight face? So she got congratulatory messages for shouting at the president. Doesn't mean you have to like the guy. I understand it. But it was like I won the election again. Well, that's what it is. It's a drug for some of these people. And it's a lot of these people, and it's, you know, it's AOC on the Democratic side, too. It's Ayanna Presley. You know, the Democrats have themselves. Here's I think, what the deal is. It seems that nobody, when they're elected to Congress, and maybe I shouldn't say nobody, fewer and fewer people when they're elected to Congress. Remember the term backbencher? Like, you won the election, you're a member of the club, but basically sit out and shut up for a couple of years, get your legs under you, get on a couple of committees, and then gradually you can, you know, give more interviews, and gradually you can get yourself elevated to a higher profile. But no, you get these people to come in there, and they think they own the place. Shut up! It's a whole symptom of society now, so... Again, I did not watch it. I read the thing from front to back today. I watched some highlights on video. And again, when I see people yelling at the President of the United States, it is just stupid. Okay? And I know it fires up a lot of you people home. Yeah, you tell her. You tell him, Marjorie. Okay, she told him, and now what? Now what? Has anything changed? It's the same thing with AOC on their side. Everybody thinks because they won, they're suddenly, you won a single congressional district. As Mitch McConnell said in the last Senate cycle, anything above a congressman or woman, a statewide election is a lot more different. You know, what do you say? The quality, candidate quality matters. And how that shake out for the GOP all across the country. But my God, this idiocy, this lunacy now. How about you show a modicum of class? Yeah, but Joe Biden, but Hunter Biden, but there's a time and a place for that. You can take care of that. You can have quality hearings if you disagreed with something the president said. You don't yell at him during the speech. Yeah, you do have to exercise a modicum of class. Show you're better. Show you're the better person. Yeah, you may have to bite your lip. We all do it in life sometimes. And thankfully, the times I've done it after I've exhaled a little bit and have gotten myself out of my angry stupor, I feel better. You know, before we go to traffic and weather together here, and if you watch the... You watched the State of the Union last night. Let me know. Let me know at what point did you fall asleep in it, because from what I'm reading, oh, my God. I mean, it is what it is. You know, I once was sent by a radio boss of mine, very nice lady that I worked for years. She sent us, me and the other department heads, she sent us to a It was like a time management seminar somewhere in the valley. It was at a hotel in Shelton, I think. Good seminar, though. I got a couple things out of it that I still use today. But the guy who gave the seminar, and I was thinking about this today, thinking about all these idiots and dopes and morons and kugutzes and stunads and kavones who have to yell and scream at the president. One of the most interesting things that I remember from that, the guy who taught the seminar talked about anger, not so much maybe in your personal life, but in your professional life. Anger. He goes, yeah, we get angry. We don't like people. We don't like this boss. We don't like that supervisor. Something that was done to us is the kind of thing where we sit back and we let it seethe in us. And I'll never forget, and I'm kind of paraphrasing because this was, I think I took this thing like 30 years ago, but I remember. But the guy who gave it said, just remember something. When you remain so angry at a person or thing beyond a reasonable time to just, you know, let that go, when you foster that anger, you're playing right into the hands of that person or thing. And you allow them or it to maintain control over you. And that's what I got to thinking last night and watching the reaction. And, oh, yeah, I was proud because I shouted at the president about drugs and about the border and the proposed cuts to social services. Yeah, but you're not doing anything clear-headed there. You're so angry. You're so wrapped up at this that you're not channeling your thought process. And here's the bottom line. Can I just tell you something? For all your Republicans out there that make fun of, ah, ha, ha, Brandon, let's go, Brandon, and senile Joe, ah, ha, 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 guess what? He won. Well, it might have been fixed. He won. He's in the big office. There's not a Republican there. So act like gentlemen. Act like ladies. Be cerebral about it. And instead of yelling at somebody like you're at a hockey game, a basketball game, or an NFL game, or an NBA game, use your brain. And look, I know he probably can't do it, or even if he did, it wouldn't make that much of a difference. But boy, if I was Kevin McCarthy, I'd pull about five of these people aside and say, shut up. You're killing us out here. And I will make sure that if you don't shut up, you're not going to be on any committees anymore. Earlier today, the governor delivered his budget address. Now, this is the second of the two major addresses governors give. They give the state of the state every year and the budget address every 2 years. Now, remember, Connecticut budgets on a biennium. So the $50.5 billion or $51 billion budget is for 2 years. Now, next year in the short session, they'll come back and they'll make some adjustments. They'll do a little fine-tuning here and there, but the basic plan is put forth today. Now, the governor talked about, the governor basically said, listen, the state's in some pretty good fiscal positions right now. So one of the things he wants to do is to, A, be careful on spending, and B, extend the earned income tax credit, and also cut the state income tax by a fraction of a point or a point. I forget exactly how the math works out. We'll listen to it right now. And basically to give Connecticut taxpayers anywhere from like a $300 to $600 break. Now, he's going to get pushback on this. He already is, pardon me, from people who say, hey, we have all this money. You need to fund social programs more. And the governor's saying, well, you know, he has some plans to do that, but the bottom line is, and this is why Ned Lamont is who he is, essentially, from the fiscal point of view, he's a Republican. He's a conservative. And you've heard him all the time say, listen, we've got to hold the line on taxes because too many people are leaving, and a lot of people I know, he didn't exactly say this, I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, he's a rich white guy from Lower Fairfield County, and he knows a lot of other rich white guys from Lower Fairfield County who, you know, at the snap of a finger, they can tell their accountant or their financial managers, hey, do what you have to do to make me a legal resident of Florida or Texas or North Carolina or something like that. So the governor here in this first bite, we'll give you a couple of minutes here. The governor, he outlines his tax proposal, and he also says, hey, these guardrails that were put in, by the way, he says, by the legislature, one thing he doesn't say is that a lot of this came from, ding, 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 Republicans when the General Assembly was pretty much 50-50. The governor says, let's not go spending like crazy again just because we have the money.
And these guardrails have contributed to a full rainy day fund, which provides us protection in the case of unforeseen risk. And we've seen a few of those, whether they be geopolitical disruption, a recession, a pandemic, or a federal government shutdown. Connecticut is well positioned to weather that storm.
Feel free to clap along if you'd like.
Look, we can't predict the future. We have a responsibility to be ready for it. So this budget builds on the momentum of the last 4 years, and COVID be damned, we're just getting started. As a result of our sound fiscal management, today I'm proposing, for the first time in, say, 30 years, we cut the personal income tax for working families and the middle class. Look, we currently tax families for 3% of their first $20,000 in income and 5% of their income up to $100,000. And my proposal will cut the current 5% rate by 10%. And the 3% rate by one-third. I want a sustainable tax cut that we can support in good times and not so good times. Look, we've had a number of false starts and promises and on-again, off-again tax cuts. Not this time. For those families most in need, I also want to go a step further. I'm proposing a 31% increase in the earned income tax credit. What do you say, Marty? 31%. Look, increasing this tax credit is one of the most impactful things we can do to target direct relief to those more than 200,000 low-income workers who are struggling to provide for their families. And 97% of the EITC funding goes to families with children. I'll say thank you. Just as an aside, I can tell you that for the first time in recorded history, this is the one issue where Ann Hughes and Dick Nixon agree, the earned income tax credit. The EITC is one of the best anti-poverty tools we can use because it encourages work, it boosts working families, and it uplifts generations to come. And it's about time that we increase it and increase it for good. So thanks to these two reforms, families earning less than $50,000 a year will pay no state income tax. Families earning less than $60,000 per year will receive a 20% tax cut. And those earning less than $150,000 a year will receive a 6.5% tax cut worth about $500. These combined savings for taxpayers, these two proposals, that's worth nearly $500 million a year in tax cuts.
All right, there you go. Earlier today, Governor Ned Lamont laying out his budget priorities, at least from the tax point of view, first proposed a state income tax cut in decades. Last one was 1996. So you're talking about 27 years. Now, you heard him in that little segment we played for you, You heard him turn around and say 31%. How's that, Marty? He's referring to Martin Looney there. And again, Martin Looney, longtime Democratic State Senate President pro tem, if he does not go along with this, if he wants something in return for a yes vote or to give his caucus the okay to vote yes on this, if Martin Looney and the left-leaning Democrats don't go along with this, you're not getting your tax cut. And there will be a huge amount of pressure, again, primarily from the far left-leaning Democrats in the state to say, well, if you're going to cut taxes for the middle class, that's great. That's part one. If you're going to increase the earned income tax credit, okay, that's part two. Part three, maybe, all right, Governor, we'll sign off on that. You got to raise taxes on the millionaires. And Marty and his cohorts up there, they're very big on a mansion tax, a this tax, a that tax, taxing unrealized capital gains. So they may want their pound of flesh. I don't know. So don't go counting your tax cut. Some elements from the governor's budget address earlier today. So we heard the first segment of it with the governor saying, hey, let's do some middle class tax cuts in the state income tax, X amount for single filers, X amount for people filing jointly or married filers, depending upon what income level you're at. He outlined several spending priorities there, far too many to air the whole thing here, because after a while your eyes and your ears blur over. He did talk about something that I guess is going to be contentious or not, would be extending, and I guess it would cost about $40 million bucks, which I'm, listen, we have the money. Let's just do it. The programs that were started during COVID of more food for kids at school, state picking up the tab for breakfast and lunch, schools. And then, though, at the end of this segment, it's interesting. The governor kind of firing a shot across the bow here. Now, on the social policies, he still leans left. And you hear at the end of this segment runs about 4 minutes. Toward the end of the segment, it sounds like, and again, I don't think I'm interpreting this erroneously, sure sounds like the governor is telling Fairfield County and some of the more exclusive counties in the state and areas in the state, like the east side of New Haven, out on the shoreline, suburban Hartford, Farmington, West Simsbury, Simsbury, Avon, and all that. He sounds like he's surely telling these areas, hey, you got to build more housing. Enough hiding behind the environmental regulations, the parking, the wastewater runoff, the sewers, and all that. But first, he talks about food at school.
You're going to have a chance to vote to provide students another important reason to get back to school. Universal free lunch for the rest of this academic year. That lunch means better performing students and one less expense for our middle class families to worry about while inflation is still high. All right. So the good news is that Connecticut still has a strong economy with almost 100,000 jobs unfilled. And our budget rewards employers who provide on-the-job training and expands the Office of Workforce Strategy to provide training to fill those jobs. A high-paying job in less than 6 months of training. That's a pay raise for you and a stronger economy for all of us. And we're going to continue to develop the short-term certificate program, training programs, working with our employers, large and small, as well as the trades, to train the next generation of workers. Some of the major industries we'll focus on is, of course, manufacturing, healthcare, information technology, transportation, green jobs, life sciences, all good-paying jobs just waiting for you. And we're going to continue to speed up certification for our teachers and nurses and other in-demand professions, allowing them to get to work faster with less debt. All right, so this budget will continue the 50% tax credit for Connecticut employers to help in-state graduates retire their student loan debt. That's one more reason for our graduates to stay in Connecticut, and one more reason for our employers to hire right here in Connecticut. In millions of dollars of workforce training will go to naught if we don't have enough housing where workers can afford to live. So for the first time in a very long time, more and more young families are moving to Connecticut. Last year, we built more market rate and affordable housing than any time this century. And you know what? We're still desperately short of housing. Look, having just climbed out of a fiscal crisis, I don't want to fall into a housing crisis. So, in addition to increasing our investments in affordable housing, our budget proposes an additional $200 million for workforce housing, which will allow the state to provide more housing options for you and more financing options for our developers so they can start building more quickly. We project increasing the number of new housing units built in Connecticut by 6,400 units over the course of this biennium. And look, time is money, and this housing trust fund will allow developers to move quickly with an emphasis upon multi-unit housing in downtown areas close to transportation. But I'm also going to urge mayors and first selectmen to develop and act upon a plan of their own, where they will allow more housing in their community through friendlier zoning and expedited approvals. Towns may submit their plans to facilitate housing on their terms, but doing nothing is not an acceptable strategy.
And that is a direct shot, I think, at some areas of lower Fairfield County, where he just said, the governor just said earlier today, doing nothing is not an acceptable strategy. And this is, I think, aimed at, you know, his home spot in the state, lower Fairfield County, where you see these really contentious battles between housing advocates and affordable housing advocates and developers and all the controversy over the so-called 830G requirement. So I'll give you one more segment here, one more quick segment. So we heard the governor in segment one say, hey, we're going to expand the earned income tax credit and cut for a lot of wage earners the state income tax by a few points, fraction of a point or point, whatever the numbers come out to. That'll save a lot of folks about $300 a year if you file individually, or about $600 a year if you file as a married couple. We heard in segment two about the initiative he wants, another $40 million for school lunch to be served free to all students post-COVID. He talked about housing, clearly telling some of the suburbs, loosen up on this housing stuff or you could be in trouble. Final segment here. This is clearly, I think, pointed at the left-leaning, really progressive lefty end of the governor's own party, the Democrats, because they have said, hey, they want higher taxes on the wealthy, and they want to spend more money on social programs, to which Governor Lamont said quite pointedly,
all right, so as we have for 4 years in a row, I proposed to you a budget for fiscal 24, fiscal 25, which is in balance. It honors the fiscal guardrails you established in 2017. It makes the biggest investment in child care, in education, in workforce, and transportation in our state's history. All right. So some of you are saying, okay, Gov, that's a good start, but you haven't gone far enough. So for those of you who want maybe a little bit more spending here, or those of you who want a bigger tax cut there, that's fine. But tell me how you're going to pay for it. I can tell you that This next fiscal year, our budget's pretty tight. There's no surplus built into it. Fiscal 25, if the economy holds up, we do have a little more flexibility there. So let's talk. But I can tell you that this is a budget that's built to expand growth and opportunity for all of our residents. It's anchored by a middle-class tax cut, keeping faith and expanding assistance for those most in need. This is my budget, and within it, our values. Each and everyone aims squarely at economic growth and inclusive opportunity.
All right, there, I think, the meaty points of today's earlier budget address from Governor Ned Lamont. All right, we played you some excerpts of the governor's budget address a little while ago on the show. One of the gentlemen I'm sure that was listening with rapt attention today in Hartford is Greenwich GOP State Senator Ryan Fazio to give us his thoughts on that, what he liked, what he didn't like, and what may go ahead here in the negotiations. Ryan, hi, it's Paul here on WICC. Good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon, Paul. I'm great. I was listening closely. I was in the front row.
So, wow.
I have no excuse for not listening.
Pretty nice. You get those on StubHub or Ticketmaster? How'd you pull those?
Yeah, they were free. I just had to pay the fees otherwise.
Right. How's that? Hey, Ryan, one thing I did point out to my listeners here before we get into the nuts and bolts on this thing. Kudos to the governor for saying, hey, guardrails. That was the word of the day. You know, that's the drinking game. We have guardrails, guardrails. But what he kind of never points out, Ryan, is those guardrails were bipartisan at a time when the General Assembly was virtually split down the middle, which shows that when both parties get together and there's almost a virtual 50-50 split, good things can happen.
Yes, and the support for the extension of the fiscal guardrails, which are protecting the long-term fiscal health of our state, is a very positive proposal by the governor, and I appreciate his support for it. Just for the listeners, let's go way, way back in time, all
sure.
the way to 2017,
mm-hmm.
when there was a 18-18 Republican and Democrat split in the state Senate in Connecticut. And Governor Malloy wanted to introduce a budget that was unreasonably profligate. And three Democrats joined with 18 Republican senators to say no. And the consequence was the adoption of Republican budgetary proposals in a bipartisan budget that included a volatility cap, a spending cap, and a bond lock that reduced the amount of debt that we can issue as a state, that inhibited the ability of the General Assembly, the state legislature, to spend temporary increases in revenue that our state government sees. We know that if you give politicians in Hartford the ability to spend too much, oh, that they'll run with it. And that's exactly why Connecticut's taxes are too high, and we've been in fiscal straits and economic straits as a state for many, many years. These guardrails that were Republican proposals that were agreed to in a bipartisan manner in 2017 when we had a 50-50 split in the state Senate have been very successful at improving the difficult fiscal status of Connecticut the last 5 years, and the governor's support for extending them is a very positive thing.
Talking to a gentleman who, along with a whole bunch of other people, listened to what Governor Ned Lamont said today in the annual budget address, proposing a two-year spending plan of about a little under $51 billion. So we're running this big surplus here. The rainy day surplus looks good. We're paying down some of our long-term debt. And Ryan Fazio is here to talk a little bit more about that. So, Ryan, the governor now, along with campaigning or for an extension of the earned income tax credit, wants to do something that hasn't been done in decades here, cut the some of the rates here for some folks in the middle class for the state income tax. What are your thoughts on the numbers that we all kind of knew were coming, Ryan? But what are your thoughts now that the governor made them official today?
Yeah, well, first of all, related to our first conversation, we're only able to reduce this high tax burden on middle-class families in Connecticut if we impose fiscal guardrails mm-hmm. and spending restraint on the politicians in Hartford. And because of doing that, thanks to the Republican proposals from 2017, we are now in a position where we can reduce middle-class taxes. And I appreciate that this governor has made this a priority, and I think it's a legacy item if he's able to cut middle-class taxes in a meaningful way. I think we could be more aggressive than the proposal that was made. I introduced a bill that would call for cutting middle-class income taxes by 2%, cutting it for people with lower incomes by more, and cutting it for people with above-average incomes by a little bit less. But we need broad-based, significant income tax relief because that enables families to form in this state. It encourages people to move to this state, to work here, and it generates economic growth, which ensures that the next generation is going to be wealthier than this one in Connecticut. That hasn't been the case in the past because of the high income tax rates and the high burdens of government in Connecticut. So I think this is a time to be ambitious, to provide real relief for families across the board. So the proposal that I've made and other Republicans have been making over the past couple of years is for even more significant relief. But I do appreciate that the governor is at least going in the right direction. And I hope that we can come to some sort of positive bipartisan agreement that provides real middle class relief.
The governor also, Ryan, it seems to me, and he's been quite upfront about this, he's talked about saying, well, he's only going to do this if everything stays in balance. So he said, listen, if you want a bigger tax, he actually, as you know, you were there, he wound up his remarks today saying, well, if you want more or less, tell me how we do this. And I do know, Ryan, you just explained, you know, the Republican proposal for more tax relief. And, he gave a little homage to Martin Looney there about the earned income tax credit. Because does the governor think that he is going to get, or do you think he's going to get significant pushback on even some of these modest tax proposals from the far left of his party?
Yeah, I think the left of the party doesn't want to see tax relief. They actually want to see taxes increase on many residents, and even more of the residents being in Fairfield County, where we are. And they want to see very, very large spending increases. They, when we're fat and happy, they want to spend. And that's basically been the prescriptions of the left wing of the Democratic Party in this state for a long time. Which is part of the reason we're in the fiscal state that we are in, the economic state that we have been, with little or any growth over the past decade plus. So the governor is in a difficult place. He wants to bring people to his left and to his right together. I think he's making an earnest effort at that. And, you know, I stand ready to help in any way I can, as do my Republican colleagues. But we need to make vital investments in this state in infrastructure. The good news is there's a lot of federal dollars that we could use, leverage for that, which the governor talked about. Federal dollars seem like they should be able to alleviate any need to increase state spending, and so that we could decrease taxes. So, again, the governor's right. If you say that you want to cut more in taxes, you should be able to explain yourself. I think I can explain myself in my proposal. If we limit the increase in spending, if we broaden the tax base by taking out a lot of the special tax carve-outs, deductions, and credits that privilege one industry over another, and use those two things to reduce middle-class income tax rates, we could actually put a far greater dent in the large tax burden that the middle class is facing in Connecticut, to the tune of 1% of people's incomes or 2% of people's incomes, instead of just 0.5%. Or less of people's income. So the governor is absolutely right that you have to actually explain yourself. So I do want to do that.
Republican State Senator Ryan Fazio, representing Greenwich, is with us with his reaction to today's budget address. Ryan, the governor quite pointedly addressed the housing situation here. And I kind of thought, again, he kind of issued a bit of a shot across the bow here to many cities and towns and the suburbs as well. And you know as well as I, we've talked about this before. I've talked about it with other legislators. There is kind of this push and pull, this tug of war, increasing pressure on a lot of cities and towns, frankly, in Fairfield County, Ryan, to, allow more housing, to allow more market rate congregate housing. The governor is saying, hey, he wants mayors and first select persons to do this, although he kind of stopped short of a threat, but it certainly sounded like he was at least, Ryan, giving homage and lip service to the people in his caucus that are concerned with this.
Yeah, and listen, we want and need more workforce housing and affordable housing. I'm for that. My constituents are for that. People across the state are for that. The question is, do we go about it in a manner where we provide local control of these issues or more state centralized control of these issues, where we overturn the ability of localities to have input over their planning and zoning and development decisions? I think it's the former. I think local input is the better way. I trust local officials and communities to make these decisions wisely, balancing all the different interests that are involved, rather than the state bureaucracy and the state politicians. Their track record over this issue and any other number of issues are very poor. They should stay in their lane. And we know, I think, in this area that municipalities run their own business better than people at the state level do. That's proven itself over and over again, whether we're cities like Stamford, which is a well-run city compared to others across the state, or towns like Greenwich, which has a very low mill rate and a great deal of diversity and economic vibrancy. But we want to create affordable and workforce housing. So I have bills that are bipartisan that try to address that in a nuanced way, local control and affordable housing, rather than state control. And one of the proposals I'm worried about coming through the legislature this year called Work, Live, Ride, and it would take away funding from towns if they don't acquiesce to the zoning rules of the state, the preferred zoning rules of the state. I don't like that. I don't think we should take away vital infrastructure and sewer and other funding from municipalities because they don't acquiesce to the rules of the state.
Ryan Fazio, finally, one thing I did want to touch on. There's a big story, a very interesting story today in the Hartford Courant as we're still in the middle of this Roe v. Wade and abortion politics. You've teamed up with another member of the caucus there, Republican Heather Summers, rely on a bill that would allow state pharmacists to prescribe certain types of contraceptives to customers without a doctor's input. Talk about that, your support for that, and why do you think, Ryan, that's necessary right now in this day and age?
Well, I think the right move is to give women more choice over healthcare decisions related to contraception, to improve access to contraception, and to reduce costs. And the proposal allows pharmacists to fill birth control prescriptions, which is something that's been done in 20 other states with success, both red states and blue states. It reduces costs. People are happy with it. The American Medical Association actually says that they think oral contraceptives should be available over the counter. That's actually a federal issue, so the federal government would have to make a decision there. But in the meantime, states can provide more flexibility, give women the option of whether they want a pharmacist or a doctor to prescribe oral contraception. That sort of flexibility, that sort of choice, and access, I think, will improve outcomes. And the places where it's been implemented, both, again, red states and blue states alike, has been implemented with success and approval of the general population.
All right, Ryan, thank you. Always good to hear from you. I'm sure there'll be a lot of times we'll speak during the session. Republican State Senator Ryan Fazio of Greenwich. Ryan, thanks. Take care, and we'll talk down the road.
Thanks, Paul. Have a good one.
You too. Thanks.